grabbed onto, and you can glom onto it too. Have you had good experiences or bad experiences with public defenders? Indeed, they are overworked. Indeed, they are understaffed. Indeed, they are probably underpaid. They're real difficult to work with. I know that myself, partially because they are so busy. But again, a lot of the problem comes from the nature of the system we're operating in, where they are pressured, persuaded, and trained to get you to plead guilty, or to get you, again, as I was saying before John and I began our conversation, to get you to accept their expertise. And a problem with political protesters is frequently we find that our agenda is somewhat different than that of the public defender. Our agenda is to publicize a case and to militantly as we can resist and mass and clog up the court system, because the law themselves, the law that is being enforced against us, or the way it is being enforced, is really a form of suppression of free speech or suppression of certain other basic rights on the street. This is seen most clearly with the Santa Cruz City camping ban and other ordinances that have been used year after year, week after week, night after night, to harass people outside who can't pay a fine if they're inflicted with it anyway, and who are simply being told, essentially banished from the area, told that they can't sleep at night, which is a violation of basic human decency, common sense, U.S. Constitution, California State Constitution, U.N. Charter, I mean, you name it. But it's still a public policy with the Santa Cruz City Council, and still the policy, in spite of the most recent tiny bit of crumb amendment by the City Council from a week and a half ago, actually a week ago, when they passed a new law that allowed you to sleep in a church parking lot if you weren't more than three vehicles and if you had the permission of the church. But here's another incoming call. Let's see what the latest caller has to say.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Hi, Robert. This is Jane Kaiser, and I don't get your radio station out here, but John Stewart called and said that you were talking about, like, public defenders. And
yeah, we were talking about public defenders. Jane, you're the head of PERC, Psychiatric...
Well, I'm not the head of it. I've been a member for quite a while.
You're one of the many contributing members to PERC.
Yeah, and I...
You're one of the many heads of PERC.
Yeah, it's a collective, so everybody's ahead of PERC.
Excellent.
Anyway...
We were asking about public defenders, and I was kind of pointing out the deficiencies of the public defender system here in Santa Cruz, and then we kind of digressed into the rights of psychiatric inmates locally and in terms of their hearing rights after 72 hours, habeas corpus hearings, conservator hearings and so forth. Where to go to see a conservator hearing on Friday at 1:30.
Oh, that's already been mentioned. Good.
We've mentioned all those things.
I really encourage people to monitor the LPS.
LPS stands for?
Lantermann Petras Short Act.
Which is the act under which people are put in hospitals involuntarily.
Right. And what's really needed is a lot of people can get out with third-party assistance, because why they're held inside the law facilities is because of a mental disability, cannot provide for food, clothing, or shelter. And if there's a friend or sometimes families give up on people, but if there's somebody that would say, I will help this person and find food, clothing, and shelter, and most people that have been in mental institutions are on a low income, but it's steady. And that's been very successful.
I'm going to jump to something that John Stewart kind of mentioned peripherally. It doesn't have to do with public defenders, although it's interesting that public defenders are colluding in these kinds of arguments. It seems that John was saying that homeless people have a much higher standard to prove in order to get themselves out of the toils of the mental health system, or out of the toils of the court's collusion with the mental health system. That is, so the court mandates that they go to a locked ward, mandates that they get treatment, mandates that they get under conservatorship, then a person who is not homeless, that person is not homeless, is much less likely to have to prove this and that and something else. Is that your experience? that? Is that just John's perspective?
I haven't really thought much on that, and I don't really, you know, I don't know about that.
Aha. Yeah, because he cited one case that in which a woman was. Well, I guess he actually made a general statement about that as well. I'm not misquoting him. But that has been the concern of numerous homeless rights activists, that individuals on the street are more vulnerable to, just as they're more vulnerable to the drug laws, because they have no place to smoke marijuana, you know, or just as they're more vulnerable to the open container laws.
Well, homeless, yes. If I thought you were putting it the other way around, that the homeless are very vulnerable.
Vulnerable, yes.
To being incarcerated, and.
But I was saying that I was asking: is there a higher standard demanded of homeless people? I mean, in other words, if you don't have a house to stay in, do they say, okay, you don't have a house to stay in, therefore you can't provide for your basic shelter? I remember
right.
What it was.
They would. Yeah, if you're not wanting to go to a board and care home,
mm-hmm.
or a system run, you know, place where you must take the psychiatric drugs and be under the thumb of a social worker, then they're more than likely just to keep you in a locked facility.
I'm remembering now what it was he said. He said that that in the criminal court system, the standard was much different. You didn't have to prove you had a home to go to. You know, all you had to show is you could make your way to a free meal, that you know how to put your clothes on yourself, and that you could survive on the streets. Whereas these things are not a consideration when they're dealing with people that are already labeled mentally ill, and that people who are now threatened with further loss of their liberties and further forced treatment. Do you think that's an accurate distinction, that the criminal system looks at things differently, let's say?
One big distinction is that in the criminal courts, often people are charged with a crime, and then in the mental health system, all you have to do is be judged mentally ill, and that's, you know, the psychiatrist can judge anybody mentally ill. You don't have to show any proof.
So you really need to be have an expense account, so you can hire your own professional guns, your own psychiatrist to come in and testify on your behalf.
Well, I'd sure like to know of a psychiatrist that would do that. I've been in this since the late 70s and monitoring court hearings, and I've yet to see a psychiatrist come in and testify on behalf of the patient.
I mean, I know that, for example, in criminal cases where psychiatric testimony is in question, it often becomes a question of hiring the...
I'd really, you know, if anybody out there ever, you know, find some psychiatrist who would go against the psychiatrist testifying in court against the patient, I'd like to know who that is.
So that doesn't happen, in other words?
I have not witnessed that, and I think it would be a really good idea.
Now, what about the local ombudsperson, the patient advocate person? Who is that person now, and how can that person be contacted?
Well, it's George Cavallo is the mental patient advocate, but he doesn't go through the court hearings. He just does in-hospital hearings, and that's the ombudsman's office at 429-1913.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to say that before I get off the phone, that I'm very busy going into Harbor Hills, which is a locked 99-bed facility for the mentally ill, and also Dominican, and that if anybody would like to visit these people who seldom have visitors, they're welcome to give me a call, and they can go with me. And
give us your number again.
My number, 475-7904.
Mm-hmm.
And often people just need a friend of support, and they're, you know, and to help them deal with all these legal things that they're going through, and courtroom is very scary, and just to have another warm body along with you, and, you know, somebody you recognize, because just about everybody in this mental health system is, like, against you, right? When you're a patient.
But they're all doing it for your own good.
Oh, definitely. Anyway, so nice talking with you, and I'm going to get off the phone.
Hey, I will invite people who want to volunteer then to help you to help support people who are going to these psychiatric hearings to give you a call at 475-7904.
Right. Thanks.
Thanks, Jane.
Bye.
Well, lots of callers this two-hour period. I'm glad. I'm fumbling with notes. I'm a little bit less prepared than usual, so it's real nice to have some input and some help from beyond the studio. So, public defenders, last time I saw a public defender in action was at the trial of Candlelight Kim Argula, or Kim Argula, whom I call Candlelight Kim Argula, who was the second case that the city and county, the DA actually, chose to try in the downtown ordinance brouhaha. Downtown ordinances, as all of you know, are the laws that make it illegal to sit down near a shop on the sidewalk, ask for a dime after dark, on the mall, have a nighttime demonstration involving a table on the mall, or a box of some sort, which will be then viewed as an obstruction. Anyway, public defender in that case was successful, or perhaps Kim's situation was successful, or perhaps the combination of the two in getting the jury not only to find her not guilty of resisting arrest, I think that was the charge, obstructing an officer, and that was in the May 11th riot, where police rioted and beat people up. One woman had a miscarriage as a consequence of a baton blow to the stomach. Another man had a rib broken. Other people, up to I believe a dozen, were either hurt or struck. And when the police simply moved in to make sure people did not sit down on the sidewalk and then stayed there for 3 hours to continue to arrest people through an arrest mill. Anyway, in the case of Kim Argula, the public defender succeeded. But as I was watching the case, I felt very concerned that the public defender was not really interested in so much in the political dimensions of the case, not interested in, for example, conferring with Kim's comrades, the people that Kim might have wanted to involve in the defense, but simply in making her own choices, her own decisions, and proceeding. Now, certainly at some point she does have to make her own choices and her own decisions, and Kim has to make the decision as to whether she wants to retain her. And there have been cases where public defenders have been disqualified. I mean, if you don't like your public defender and you have irreconcilable differences, I believe you have a right to refuse that public defender. That happened in the case of Suzanne Espinoza, a candidate for actually state office on the Peace and Freedom Party, who was involved in the Elfland trespass prosecutions a couple years back. She was being tried in the court of Many Faces McAdams, as we call that municipal court judge, or as I have, who ran the courtroom like a star chamber. He had me excluded from the courtroom for whispering quietly to one person. Just a very strange behavior on his part. He found her in contempt of court and had her jailed for 5 days, essentially for conducting her own defense and repeatedly informing the jury of their right to nullify. And I could talk about that too. And public defenders don't. But anyway, she herself disqualified her public defenders. I think she went through 5, 6, 7, 8 public defenders, something like that. Somewhere between 5 and 8 public defenders who were refusing to undertake the defense she wanted. And so I think that it is true that you have the right to do that. At least she found she had the right at that time, and I don't think the law has changed since then. So you do have some say in what goes on with your public defender. I have adopted certain strategies myself when I go to trial. So, often these have worked, sometimes they have not. Generally, I press for an immediate jury trial on anything that allows a jury trial. So, for instance, all misdemeanors, you have a right to a jury trial, a trial by 12 people, and from which there has to be a unanimous verdict of guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. And you have the right to a court-appointed attorney if you can't afford one. You have the right to subpoena witnesses. You also have that right in infractions to subpoena witnesses, but not the right to a jury trial or to a court-appointed attorney. And you have the right to confront witnesses, so you have the right to testify or to refuse to testify, you know, a whole series of rights in a trial. And the public defender in that situation, the public defender's office, I'd hoped that because there have been frequent protest trials in the last decade around homeless issues, that they would be interested in conferring with some homeless advocates to get a closer sense of what kinds of concerns we have that perhaps public defender's office can become more aware of in their defenses. And because they often don't have time to discuss these things during the trial, they barely have time to meet with you before the trial. They're just very hurried, and that's legitimate because they don't have, they are overworked and they don't have the time. But frequently they tend to take a somewhat expert stance, an authoritarian stance, and I know better than you do stance, and take my direction or I won't help you stance, which to some extent, of course, in the end, if it's a matter of principle, they certainly have a right to do, but I think they tend to do as a matter of course, first because they're a privileged class, they're a bunch of attorneys, and attorneys think they're better than other people generally, particularly when they're dealing with the law, even though it's you that's going to be the person that's going to jail, not them, but also because they are a part of a system which kind of encourages their sense of status there, and that you're supposed to be respectful and defer to your attorney and so forth and so on. In fact, if you're aware of it, you can undertake the privileges an attorney has if you defend yourself on even on minor matters. So, for instance, most people come into court on infraction matters like minor tickets, sit in courtroom for an hour and a half waiting for the judge to read through the litany of this and that, waiting for the attorneys to do all their cases, and then you get to come up and make your plea at the arraignment, and you usually have to wait an hour and a half. If you're aware of it, you have the right to walk up as though you were an attorney, because in your own case, you can be your own attorney. You don't have to be to receive a special diploma for it. You simply walk up to when the court says, are there any other counsel cases? You say, yes, I'm John Doe, line 44735, representing myself, and I plead not guilty. Instead of waiting 2 hours to say that when the judge calls your name, you can actually stand up and do that during the period of time when the attorneys are engaging in that kind of activity. And most people don't know that. So people are intimidated by the courts, and they're intimidated by attorneys, and unfortunately the public defenders tend to play on this to make their clients as compliant as possible, because it is it's in their interests to move things along smoothly. I mean, it's not really any skin off their nose whether you win or lose. I mean, they will concede that they'll try to do a good job, but in terms of doing the job that you want them to do, that will often be a tussle and a real difficult situation. And people are more interested in, we had a court watch project that was going on several years ago, which we were really trying to inform people in courts of their rights. Some of us, I was one of them, Gemstone, Jim Ostrowski was another, Linda the Lark Edwards, when she was alive, was doing this as well. Letting people know their rights in the courts, specifically different kinds of legal strategies to use, in which you don't need to use public defenders, or in which you can more effectively request of your public defender certain things, or even make demands that you want things done a certain way, and if your public defender doesn't want to do them that way, then she can take another case. After all, it's your life, your liberty, your property that is in question here, that is at stake. So, the lines are open, and you are listening. Bathrobe Spears Broadsides, and that was a phone call coming in, and is a phone call coming in, and we'll have to see just who's ringing so loud.
Hi there, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Hi, it's Linda again.
Ah, Lighthouse Linda.
I was listening to your advice to people about attorneys and public defenders, and I wanted to, one, differ slightly, and two, talk about legal aid and the politics that are going on to try to defund them right now.
Okay.
Most of your advice I don't disagree with, but I wanted to give a plug to Tom Noddy because, as I recall, Tom was the first person to really sort of deliberately go about trying to teach people about the concept of jury nullification.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he did a good job, but that was back in the late 70s. Mm-hmm. So maybe after I hang up, you could reinforce that concept. You mentioned it, but didn't really explain what it was.
No, yeah, it's a long subject and an important one.
And then I wanted to share my personal experiences with the phenomena called your right to a public defender. First of all, except for the case you mentioned of Kim's attorney mm-hmm. recently, I've never seen them really be there for a client, ever, never, ever. You know, it's like they tell you, well, you get to talk to me 5 minutes before your turn on the court docket.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get in there and you're looking forward to those 5 minutes and you took them seriously, or at least you interpreted that what they meant was out of concern for you, the client they're being paid to represent.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, you're one of three or four people that gets those 5 minutes to converse with your attorney in. I consider that a serious compromise of the whole idea that people are entitled to legal counsel in this country. Poor people don't get any, unless they're very clever or they have a friend who's a free lawyer. It isn't happening through the public defenders. Now, I understand and I agree with you and John who say that those guys are overworked, but my experience is you have to already be in jail to get a call back from them. And when I went in the first time ever having to deal with these guys, they couldn't even find my file. You know, I'd run all over town getting papers for him and delivering them ahead of time so they could look at him, and they couldn't even find him, and they never did find him.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that's, like, atypical. I hope I'm wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So a person who is taking the system to be the way it claims it is going to come up shafted mm-hmm. when it comes down to being in court. And the second thing I'd like to say is that you know some of this, so you can elaborate if you want to, but I just found out the hard way that it's never or hardly ever in a person's interest to give your plea to be no contest or nolo contendere. That's stupid. I mean, I try to take care of
Let's explain to the audience what that plea means. You can usually plead guilty, not guilty. Well, you can always plead guilty, not guilty, or I don't contest, which is guilty, but I'm not civilly liable for the charges.
Well, it's not like saying I'm guilty. It's like saying no contest. But it gets treated like guilty.
It does, yes.
And I felt that it would expedite things to say that in a stupid little small traffic-related thing. But in fact, it just gives the judge a right to override many other so-called rights you have if you say that. Now, I mean, at the time I thought, well, this isn't worth going through a jury trial, you know. This is worth just taking care of. My driver's license is hanging in the balance. Whatever moves it along fast. But I also assumed that the system plays by its own rules, and I got a capricious judge.
Not Mad Dog Mulligan, perhaps.
Well, it was Judge Mulligan.
Indeed.
Avoid Judge Mulligan. He contradicts himself, he lies to you in your face, and if you happen to have friends, he really gets weird.
John Mulligan is the traffic court referee who wears judicial robes to be found in the basement of the county building, through whom all traffic infractions go unless you disqualify him, which you can do if you go to the clerk's window and tell the court clerk in advance you wish to disqualify Mulligan. And what that requires then is you go, the court date will be set ahead about a week, and go to another court, and you have to go to another arraignment. But it's often well worth it. I would say generally it's worth it.
There was no way for me to extricate myself from his abuses short of getting an attorney. And he dragged something out for 3 months that should have been taken care of in one visit to his court. Mm-hmm. I won't even get into what it cost me. But so that's the second point I want to make, is it's wise not to plead no contest in spite of the seeming convenience, because sometimes it can haunt you later or blow up in your face.
Yeah, I never believe in pleading no contest. Well, it depends. I mean, if I'm going to plead guilty, I may plead no contest, but I don't think I've ever pleaded guilty in a Santa Cruz court
and
that I remember.
My friend Shannon advises people never plead guilty unless it's your only moral option, you know.
Mm-hmm.
There's no point in telling a court you're guilty of something. So, what was the other thing? Oh, I want to tell you about legal aid. So, public defenders basically are not available to the people who most need them. And now the same thing's going to happen in terms of the few areas of civil law, thank you.
Such as tenant-landlord law.
Yeah, because legal aid is being politically attacked by the local county board of supervisors, who has provided like 14% of their funding for some years, at the same time that Congress is trying to eliminate their primary source of funding, which is the Legal Services Court. I see this as a direct assault on poor people. I mean, if you go in there and you talk to Jan Butz or Ray Belgard, the people who are trying to attack our particular county's legal aid society, they have their little petty reasons to be political about it, but they're also being self-defeating. You know, they're not doing their job as supervisors by trying to make an issue out of stupidity, you know.
So what do you recommend to people who want to see legal aid continue, although I think it's going to be defunded at the national level by the Gingrich Congress?
Well, maybe they'll lose Legal Services Corp funding, and maybe they'll be reduced to a tenth of what they're already doing, which is way less than a tenth of the public need right now, because people are becoming poorer in faster numbers than I've ever seen in my life before. But they could still continue along because there are organizations of lawyers, like what is it called, the Lawyers Guild?
The National Lawyers Guild.
Yeah, and the Local Lawyers Guild. There are other ways. You know, this is where these lawyers that charge $180 an hour, they'll kick back a few bucks to an organization like Legal Aid or individuals like what Ray Grunick used to do to appease their guilt or something.
Ray Grunick is a lawyer. He used to help the poor here.
I was a lawyer,
and is now still a legal worker.
Yeah, anyway, I'm saying that we don't have to depend on the government solely in order to provide legal counsel for poor people. But as long as those of us who are poor who have to deal with the court system for whatever reason go along with this fraud, this facade, and just like the judges do and the whole justice system working people do, the courts, there won't be support for the people who need it. And that constitutional guarantee is just a joke, you know. So if you want to see legal aid continue, you need to get in touch with your county board of supervisors, and if they've helped you, let them know. And if they haven't helped you because they said it's not their priority because they are already underfunded, let the county know that.
Do you have a member of the board of supervisors?
No, I don't. I used to know it by heart, but they changed.
I think it's 454-2200, but I'm not positive.
200 or 2003, something like that.
Anyway, it's in the phone book, and it's not hard to reach. It's in the government pages, in the first few pages of the phone book, and supervisors aren't meeting this month, but you can still contact their offices.
All the more reason to contact their offices.
Yeah, they maybe
have more time to listen.
That's possible if they want to. Marty Wormhout is the local supervisor for many of the people downtown.
But I really recommend that, you know, Jan Butz lives in the Live Oak area and represents those people and has an obligation. There are growing numbers of poor people in that area who need legal aid services. And she needs to get in touch with the fact that she also represents the poor people in Live Oak, not just the property owners.
Mm-hmm.
Not to say that all property owners are well off, but close to it.
Mm-hmm.
She needs to understand who she represents, and I think if she did, she's a smart woman, she would stop these petty games. You know?
So what is housing now up to, by the way?
What is housing now?
Uh-huh. Now, what is it up to?
Well, I'm willing to talk on behalf of Housing Now in Santa Cruz about the lawsuit against the county for having sold out on the housing element, which is part of the general plan. One of the reasons the County Board of Supervisors is singling out legal aid to pick on more than they do other nonprofits, which, by the way, save the county a lot of money in the services they provide compared to having the county do it, is because Legal Aid has attempted to bring attention to the county's omissions through the courts, because they've refused to listen to anyone else, including Housing Now in Santa Cruz, when we begged them not to pass a housing element for this county last year that was even worse than the one that was already in place.
So what is the housing element, for those of us who don't know?
Well, I don't know if I can give you a good definition, but I'll give you my impression. Every jurisdiction of the state, including the county of Santa Cruz, have an obligation to provide housing that's kind of proportionate to their population. A lot of counties don't like it, like, you know, Marin County is another one like ours, that, you know, they just want rich people here. They don't want poor people here. And they figure one way to control who lives here is to control what housing gets built. So our county has been judged by the state. That's what gets me, you know. It's already been told by the state, you ain't doing it in Santa Cruz County. But they get all mad at legal aid instead of California State.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, our county is one of the handful who actually bothers to comply with filing the legal papers that say what their plan is. A lot of counties just shine it on. I think that's even more egregious, but I don't live there. I live here. Anyway, Housing Now! Has taken the position long before Legal Aid decided to actually file papers in the courts against the county's housing element that the county needed to be sued because they were totally unresponsive or regressive at best. I watched as the county, I don't know what department, but the bureaucracy that works for the county, presented this housing element, and in it, but they had this list of community organizations that supposedly serve homeless and ill-housed people. And most of those, at best, do the service they claim they provide 1 or 2 months a year. And many of them don't do diddly. You know, they refer you to Harbor Hills or something. You know, but they list these 50 to 80 organizations as if they were doing something, you know, because these organizations talk about doing something, I guess. And the County Board of Supervisors, I guess, didn't know any better. Which doesn't say much for their what we're electing, you know. But what really galled me, and the reason Housing Now! And the California Homeless Network spoke up against this at the close of the hearing on the housing element, is that not only did the bureaucrats propose incidentalness, you know, like calling things that were going to happen anyway a response to the state's mandate that there be more affordable housing here. And they didn't mention low-income housing, something Linda Edwards could have afforded or something. That's not even in the picture. But there's not enough affordable housing countywide. This is, we're speaking of all the unincorporated parts of Santa Cruz County in this legal context. But then they present their little thing, and Jan Buttes gets up there and says, well, I think that's too liberal. And she backs out the one and only thing, a kind of a loosening up of the granny unit ordinances that would have helped, potentially, I mean, could have helped, I don't know how likely it was, it could have helped there become a little more housing that could have ended up rented by people who need affordable housing. There were no guarantees that it would, but at least it could have happened. It would have been a few more units of housing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And she backed it out. And the other four guys, and that's when Gary Patton was still here, they didn't say a word. They just let her do it. They didn't even posture. You know, they folded.
Mm-hmm.
So I find it disgraceful and disgusting, and if I had the means to do it, I would have a lot different lawsuit, and it would have a lot more teeth in it than just the legal aid suit, which affirms what the state has already found against the county.
Mm-hmm. So what's the status of that lawsuit? Where is it at right now?
Well, you know how things get in the court. It's just sitting there in the court. It's been filed. The county hasn't answered. Who knows what's going to happen? I guess they think if they stall long enough, something will go away.
Right.
Meanwhile, we have federal and state cuts that are going to create at least 1,000 more homeless people by October.
Hmm. Any report from Welfare Parents Support Group about what's happening there?
Not through me, baby.
You're no longer with them?
Well, I do volunteer work for Welfare Parents Support Group, but I do not speak as their agent.
I see.
They do have, every Sunday in July, there are activities for families with children, and you can call 458-9070 to find out about them or to get help if you have a question or problem about the welfare bureaucracy.
Mm-hmm. And
if you want to know how to help with Housing Now! In Santa Cruz or get information that we might be able to facilitate, call me at 426-7701.
You're on the Interim Downtown Review Group on Downtown Problems as well, I believe?
No.
Oh, yeah, I think so. That's what I was told.
You mean above the line thing?
No, it's a group set up by the mediators to...
Oh, yes, I'm trying to be helpful as someone who can connect with street people and homeless people with the efforts of Daniel and Kim, who are hoping to mediate and get a dialogue going between the...
Have you had many complaints called in for you? Or?
I know of only one.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I can't really talk about it.
Okay. Well,
I'd sure like to hear from more people.
You want to give your number?
426-7701.
Okay.
426-7701. Or, I mean, people can call free radio and share things, too. That's one of the nice things about being an indigenous station, is that you can really share what you're thinking. You don't have to go through quite as many hoops
Indeed, and you can also call me on my program between 10 and noon every Monday and Friday, as long as I'm here. Anything else, Linda, before I turn to some poetry by Julia Vinegar?
Nope, not for me. I just think if people want their electeds to do their job, they're going to have to call the County Board of Supervisors and say something on behalf of legal aid.
Okay.
Because, you know, if poor people are cut entirely out of the legal system, they're going to have to respond in some other way. It's inevitable.
And I hope they do.
Well, I hope we survive it.
All right, then. Yeah, give a call to the Supes and give a call to Linda for, you know, more information around these issues.
And or if something terrible's happening to you on the streets or in your landlord discussions, let me know what it is. If you can't do it in your own name, and maybe I can help.
And your number again is?
426-7701.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Linda.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
And yes, that was Lighthouse Linda from Housing Now, and a worker also with Welfare Parents Support Group, and a person who's working with the lawsuit, or is helping with the lawsuit, I think, or perhaps certainly is an advocate of it. And wait, another phone call? My goodness, I don't know what to say.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Hi, Bathropes Pierre. How you doing here?
I'm all right. That sounds like
the,
yes, it's Bob LaMonica. Go ahead.
Listening to the very fascinating dialogue, and of course, I'm involved with the DA recall. And this is an opportunity for the citizens of Santa Cruz to make a statement about abuse of power. Okay, and I think that it's a reasonable thing to request that public officials be held accountable to the same standard as the rest of us. Look at the track record of the district attorney, the fifth term DA, Art Danner, and you go back to 1987 and you look at the guy who's involved in a drunken car wreck. Mr. Danner admits to drinking, he's at fault, and the victim is given a blood test. And you got to ask why. In my opinion. If you don't ask why, then really you just don't want to know. And if you have this kind of double standards, and if you accept this kind of double standards in the prosecutor's office, well, what it says is that the whole thing is a charade.
Bob, do you have any thoughts on public defenders? You've been hearing our conversation probably about the defenders. Any sense on that?
I think it's a turnstile. I think for the most part, unless you have a sensational case, you're caught in the turnstile and it's relatively hopeless.
Right.
My sense of it.
I've been reading in this. Did you read the Sentinel article from, I guess it was the 2nd of July, which talked about how the county is really pays more for public defenders than almost any county in the state, and it's had the same firm since 1976? And Bigham Christensen, not quite sure, let's see if I've got the name right. Bigham Christensen and Minsloff. And the grand jury did a report on that. I'm sorry to shift your focus a little bit. I want to try to use your expertise here. The county signed a contract with the firm in 1994, $3.3 million the first year, yearly increases of $200,000, $280,000, will bring that to $4 million by 1997-98. They were awarded, the contract with the public defender has been routinely awarded since Jimmy Carter was president in 1978 and does not expire until 1999. I'm wondering if the fact that these guys are insulated in their positions tends to make them more smugger and less really concerned with doing the kind of job for defendants that the defendants want and need. And also, do you have any suggestions about what people should do who are not satisfied with the representation of their public defenders?
I think they should sign the DA recall petition, and I mean that in all sincerity. Okay, we qualify for the ballot. There's going to be a lot of rocking of the boat that's going to happen. A lot of repercussions are going to come out of this DA recall. I found out yesterday, and I checked it out, that there has been a successful DA recall in Plumas County, which is between Sacramento and Tahoe. Okay, and they dealt with similar circumstances. A corrupt district attorney who had a track record of corruption, and they were able to bring the issue to the ballot, and the guy went down. Okay, so I think that's the beginning. But in terms of the public defender having problems with a public defender, I would do what can be done to address the issue to the Board of Supervisors and to do what can be done to raise the issue in the public consciousness.
Plus, you can also go to the grand jury. You can file a grand jury complaint.
Yeah. Now, on that note, many people who live in Santa Cruz might not know that the grand jury was quite critical about Mr. Danner, who came out with a report in the late end of June. which the Pajaronian reported on and the Sentinel did not. In fact, I'm looking at the Pajaronian article right now. Danner says criticism by grand jury based on faulty information. See, the way the game these guys play is that it's old news, it's all been rehashed, just like Nixon did with the covered-up burglary.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But finally, the power of truth is what nailed the President of the United States. Because what it got down to is whether or not we're going to have a president that we knew covered up a burglary, or whether we had to get the guy out of office.
So for those who want to sign the Danner recall petition, whom should they call and how can they help?
Okay, they can call 457-2670.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to be at Zanotto's in Long's today. We're more places than that, but certainly on a committed basis, Zanotto's and Long's from about 4 to 6. If you want to sign the petition, get copies of the petition out in front of Zanotto's and Long's.
Do you have to be a registered voter to sign up voters?
You're a registered voter in Santa Cruz County. You know, mm-hmm. We need 1/10 of the 140,000 registered voters to qualify for the ballot.
And how's it looking?
We're somewhere around 5,000, between 5,000 and 6,000 now.
And how long do you have?
We have till October 12th. We have, I believe it's 89 days now. We're building up steam. It's like watching a curve unfold, right? What I find very interesting are the middle class people that don't want to know. You know, it's really something, you know, this inertia, right? But by dealing around them, people, you know, finding those that are willing to accept truth, we'll qualify for the ballot. I have all faith that we're going to qualify. Just a point here about the Old Boys Network. You know, Santa Cruz is a very politically interesting community, but there is an Old Boys Network behind the scenes, and they're very ensconced. And it's very difficult to get the truth to come out, even in regards to a corrupt district attorney. It is, to me, unconscionable. The actions of the Santa Cruz County Sentinel in particular is unconscionable. That they would do the opposite of taking on the truth, that they would give this guy newspaper space for puff pieces, but they won't take on the reality. Okay.
Sounds like the Sentinel, right?
Yeah. Now, for example, the reality of the covered-up falsified time cards, which is what brought the recall together, the reality is that Art Danner paid Catherine Gardner hush money from county funds to keep her quiet during the last election. And any spin that Danner wants to give on it that he is doing her a favor is just so much hooey. Catherine Gardner demanded a civil service hearing on July 20th last year when she knew that she was fired. She filed a wrongful termination suit. Danner wasn't doing her any favor. He was paying her hush money because he didn't want to deal with what he thought was going to be uncomfortable publicity.
That suit's recently been resolved, right?
The wrongful termination suit?
Yes.
It's our understanding that the wrongful termination suit was filed so that Gardner could get a favorable recommendation from her ex-boss. She is now an assistant DA, what I've heard, in Fresno.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So in sense of resolve, in the sense that Gardner got another job, I mean, that's a kind of a personal resolution.
Right.
In the sense of the DA getting away with covering up time cards, falsified time cards, no, it isn't resolved.
And you think that influenced the last election?
There's no question about it. There's no question about it. If it didn't influence the last election, then Mr. Danner would have been an honorable man and would have come forward when Gardner came forward to him, which was in the spring of 94.
And he ran in June of 94, right?
June of 94, and he won by 58%. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
This is the kind of stuff that I think, in all honesty, you should do once. You want to abuse power, you do it once. Now, we've got a listing of allegations against Art Danner that cover the gamut from prosecutorial misconduct to double standards to misuse of county funds to theft of public funds. Anybody that wants a copy of this Danner's list, they can get one from a signature gatherer or they can call 457-2670.
That's the Coalition to Recall Danner.
Right.
And you're listening to Bob LaMonica. Bob, I'm going to have to sign off because I'm off the air in about a minute and a half. But I think your show comes on, it's on Friday afternoons, or is it today?
Friday's 1 to 2. In fact, I'm going to have, because I need to focus more and more on petition gathering, and I've been taking Thursdays as my day off, and I'm going to do one final show on Radio Free Santa Cruz Thursdays, and I'm going to keep my Friday slot 1 to 2 through the duration of the petition drive. But I can't, you know, and forgive me, but I just, you know, Thursday, the show, I like being on the air there, and I want to stay on the air Fridays, but... In fact, I'm going to do one more Thursday show this Thursday.
What time would that be?
6 to 7.
And Friday will be on from 1 to 2.
1 to 2, and that'll be for the duration of the petition drive. That's through October 12th. It's real important that we qualify for the ballot. This is a real test of a very basic principle, which is that in the final analysis, the power lies with the people. It doesn't lie with the DA's spin doctors.
Well, I thank you, Bob, and as usual, there's no shutting you up.
Hey, so, Robert, thank you very much.
All right, guy. Bye-bye.
All right, then. Now, that's about it. I think Bob is going to have the last word on Bathrob Spear's broadsides. Until next Friday, I'm going to be signing off, and I guess to send me off, let's have a little more of Shrub in 88, a somewhat archaic, out-of-date satire on George Bush from that great satirist Dave Lippmann, who's got some great stuff out that you probably haven't heard and you'll probably never hear again.
So he wrote up a paper on covert war, said you gotta show Congress and the press the door. His master's thesis, all the Ed Meese's just had to applaud. Trading arms for guns on secret runs, but please don't call it fraud. But Secord's boss in the operation sent the consents running for their mummies. None other than General John K. Singlau, world's number one fetter of suspected commies. Was a drug war, air power settled the score, and Secord was a headache.